Jackson gave me the news of a planet far away. And Colonel O'Neill will assemble a team that will try to save the day. Dr. Sam has a master plan and a science attitude. And the Jaffa Teal, he's part of the deal with his trusty Goa'u. It's just a regular day at Stargate Command, and it might be hard to understand.
Welcome back, everybody, to Three Fries Short, where we are considerably more sober than we were last time. Considerably.
Thankfully.
Which is a good thing. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Before we jump in, do we have any Fry Box news? I don't think we have anything news-worthy.
I think we have an email asking about the Furlings.
Oh, yeah, let's pull that up. This is also like the day after we did our intro recording for the previous episode. So,
yes,
future us is now past us. Mm-hmm. We've time traveled. Let's see.
Yeah, there's an email from Harrison Banks. If somebody wants to read that.
Yes, yes. I got it. I'm on it.
Okay. Excellent.
All right. Hi, Three Fries Short. My name is Harrison, and I am a new listener to your podcast from Australia. I found you through the 25th anniversary YouTube interview with Brad Wright and RDA, where you sent in a clip introducing yourselves. I have been a Stargate
fan since people are finding us through that. Love it so much.
He says, I have been a Stargate fan getting choked up here since it first aired out of order over here on commercial TV in the late 90s. I didn't know that until recently that it did air out of order in Australia. So fun fact, my wife and I own all 10 seasons of SG-1 on DVD and have watched it through multiple times, as well as streamed Atlantis when it was on Prime. My favorite episode ever is The Fifth Race, because apparently I've lost the why can't I say the word philatus? To speak properly.
Philatus. Well, because you're not an ancient. It's fine.
It's fine. I do have a question, though. We are first introduced to the idea of the ancients in the episode where Ernest Littlefield, I forgot what that one is called, Torment of Tantalus is that episode. Mm-hmm. And then in Fifth Race, we learn of the alliance of four races, the Ancients, the Asgard, the Furlings, and the Nox. We meet all of them at some point in the series, except for the Furlings. They are never spoken of again. Why? What happened? Were they wiped out? By who? Why didn't the other three allies help them out? And why do they not talk about them? Was there some sort of betrayal? I'm not sure if there are answers, but I would love to hear your theories. All the best, Harrison.
I like the idea of a betrayal or something. Like, yeah, what if they went bad?
Like, we have discussed this quite a bit throughout, like, different TikToks or the podcast and all sorts of random ideas. But the betrayal concept has not really come through yet as an idea.
I don't know.
Do you guys want to give, like, a quick thoughts on this one?
It would be different. Like, you know, we see the ancients, they ascended, and then the Nox kind of just became their own pacifistic society. They were like, okay, we were friends and like we're still cool pals and whatnot, but we're gonna abstain from fighting or anything. Then you have the Asgard, who take a very active role with humans, and you know, they do want to communicate with humans and be the allies. So you have like three very different outcomes. And I think a betrayal or them becoming bad or corrupt in some way would be a very cool way.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe they became bad and they had to be like kicked out of the cool kids club And then it was just never talked about.
Yeah, because they're...
I want to go last on my theory. Rebecca, if you have something you want to say. I'm ever evolving my thought process.
For me, I like the betrayal idea, but I also, and I've said this, and I will continue to say this, I don't ever want to see the Furlings because I don't think that we should at this point because of that very reason. It's like the running gag. So, but maybe they could be talked about, like, say we got a new series and then they could find out that the reason why is that betrayal. I like that a lot because otherwise, you know, the rest of them are kind of like in agreement with, you know, how bad the Goa'uld are and how bad, you know, things like that. So what if they help the Goa'uld out at some point? I don't know.
Right. And in the fifth race, it's mentioned there once was an alliance. Okay, so that tells me that it's no longer a thing. Mm-hmm. So why is it not a thing anymore?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Christina?
Yeah, I can take it.
I have like two working things. One is, you guys know I have this idea that maybe they're like actually the lizard people here on Earth and they're incognito on some secret mission and they're just like not spoken of because like they can't be, you know? That's one working theory. The other is, I still feel like at some point, I like to think that the Furlings had not maybe all of them were represented here on Earth, but I do feel like there was a station of them here, much in the time of the Goa'uld back in ancient Egypt. And a part of me then has worked on this theory of like, what if they're, this is like super silly, like actually, like what if they are the ancient cats like of Egypt, like the black cats, like what if the Furlings, and then they've just stayed, and that's why they've gotten such a big thing with witchcraft and like in their ability to kind of be involved with those things. And maybe they are like Wicca and like all those things, like that's actually the Furlings through felines, through black cats.
Stargate Horror Story, Salem. Yes.
But like, there's a story to be told in that. And I've thought about it and I'm like, okay, wait, ancient Egypt, wait a second, the black cats, the Furlings, what if they were also here on some sort of mission undercover, whatever? And maybe there is a betrayal in that because some of the Goa'uld were like these kings and queens, like maybe there was some sort of alliance that they did to like take over something with Earth. So anyway, I've got ideas down that I need to keep going, but
that's really cool.
Yes. And now I own two of them and they're in my house.
Oh,
running around.
I'm gonna start calling my cats Furlings.
They are Furlings, little Furlings. Anyway, I like this conversation. Well, what is it? Hang a lantern on it for another time. We can continue this conversation. I'd like to hear other people's thoughts. This is a good time for you to continue emailing us.
Yes. At 3FryShortPodcast@gmail.com. That is the letter or the number. I have fixed it. So.
Oh, yay.
Oh, cool.
The letter, the word, or the number. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
But everything is functional again. Numeric. Yes.
Yay. Love it. Love it. Yeah. That's all we had for Frybox, really.
I mean, it's a pretty good Frybox, though. I appreciate the email. It was an interesting one.
Yeah. I'm glad you found us. Thanks for tuning in. I'm glad you enjoy the show so far.
Mm-hmm. So far.
All right.
It could go downhill from here.
You could get to a point and be like, oh, man, I'm done. Thor's wagon just sent me over the edge.
Thor's wagon. I don't think it's going to get any more downhill than the last episode. So,
yeah,
it's fine. Oh, God. It's all good. Yeah. No, we can jump right in.
So this week we're talking about season 2, episode 20, Show and Tell. We're getting to the end. Mm-hmm. Ergo's killing me. He's like biting me. He's he wants attention and I'm not giving it to him. And now he's like whipping his tail around. And
being typical
stuff.
Ergo.
Yeah. But we're getting to the end of season 2, guys. It's coming. Mm-hmm. This, I feel like, is a long lost, forgotten episode because I remembered it. I remembered the general plot. You have the kid, the Ritu, but then it's like, I don't remember how it was resolved. I don't remember if they ever revisited it or brought it up again, which
I feel like the Ritu get mentioned at some point, but I don't know that it ever comes
full circle.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. So I was kind of going into it a little bit blind because I couldn't remember some of the details, but I think it's a really great episode, and we'll get mm-hmm. into it and we'll talk about it more. But a lot of the stuff that is centered around Jack is really sweet, and I really mm-hmm. enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. It was like maybe it was intentional, but I don't remember it being a Jack centric episode, but it very much mm-hmm. is a Jack character centric like episode. It's speaking of like just him and who he is. So
yeah. And I think anytime there's a child involved or children, mm-hmm. That really plays to his mm-hmm. Jack's benefit to like shine throughout the episode. And you know, anytime there's a kid in the episode, it's like, oh, this is going to be a Jack has all the feelings episode. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. get ready, guys.
Yep. Brace for impact. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this one's an interesting one. All right. Let's get into it.
The episode opens up. There's an unauthorized off-world activation. There's no Iris code. So they're like, well, it's none of our teams. Like, we don't know who it is. And they close the Iris. And then it opens again. And General Hammond says that it's not Walter. It's some other guy. It's Walter's day off, I guess. And he's like, I didn't tell you to open that Iris, son. He's like, I didn't. I did. It just opened by itself. And they try to close it again. And then it like opens up again. And it's kind of tense. We see a hooded figure step through. And Jack is like, sir, like, they're here. Someone's here. Like,
mm-hmm.
and it's to think to be in that situation would be so scary because they have this Iris in place. It's protected them from so much so far. And then for it to just not work and somebody come through, it could be like, what on earth is happening? We have no idea what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And this hooded figure steps through and we see that it's a young boy. And Hammond orders him to be searched. And Jack, very smartly, nominates Carter to do the search of him because she can sense if there's a Gould symbiote. I think Teal'c can too, but she's far less intimidating mm-hmm. than mm-hmm. if Teal'c would come up. So she checks him. She doesn't sense anything. She doesn't see anything that he's a Gould. And then Jack poses the question, okay, why is he here? What's going on? And the boy replies, I'm here to warn you. And we have the opening credits.
Such a cliffhanger mm-hmm. opening.
I did make a note. There was one airman. He was one of the guys hiding behind the shields. And he kind of peeked around and saw, like, to look at the boy. And I was like, is that a DeLuise bro? And it was. Because he looked like Pete. And I'm like, I know that, like, the DeLuise brothers are obviously, like, throughout the show a lot. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if they reused David, who is Pete Shanahan, our number one Dave. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. but it was Peter DeLuise. It was a different one. It was a different bro. But I recognized his face. So after the opening credits, Janet's examining the boy to determine if he's a threat. You know, Jack points mm-hmm. out, does he have a bomb in his chest, biohazard in his teeth? Like, a lot of the things that they've experienced with children and how they're used as weapons. And she finds nothing except for the fact that he is kind of malnourished and weak. And he looks like he's bald. He has no hair. And that head is veiny. Like, I don't, if you notice, and it gets worse and mm-hmm. worse, like the sicker he gets, like, mm-hmm. it's like translucent. It's kind of unnerving.
It's really well done. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's so subtle when it, you know, especially at first.
Yeah, and I can't tell if they shaved his head and did the makeup over top of that, or if that's a bald cap. Either way, if it's a bald cap, I couldn't tell. It looked convincing to me. It was very well done. Mm-hmm. And if they shaved his head, then kudos to that young little boy for doing that. He was also in the X-Files. I think I brought this up before. He was the chess prodigy in the X-Files.
Yep.
I forget his name. Yep, something. Yep. I forget, but he was in the X-Files. So Sam asks his name, But the boy only responds to Jack, and he already knows his name. He's like, you're Colonel O'Neill. And his mother told him, and he gestures off to the side, like, my mom told me, but there's nobody there. They're just like, okay, he has an imaginary friend, an imaginary mom. And if you guys want to read this dialogue between Jack and the boy, we get kind of a backstory.
Sure.
And then there's like one last one Hammond line. We don't even need to read that.
But yeah.
Who do you guys want to go?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to go? I'll be O'Neill. And
okay, I'll be boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Mother says to speak only to you.
Okay. Why me?
Because mother has observed you and determined she likes you. You are one who can be trusted.
Well, thank you, ma'am. How long have you been watching me?
For many weeks.
Weeks?
Yes. She first saw you on another planet, and she followed your team through the Stargate at that time. She observed you all until your team returned with the one called Tonani? Tonani, right? Based on your actions at that time, Mother believes you are the only honorable leader among your people. It was only your team who did not want to steal Tanani's mineral.
Then why not trust the rest of my team?
Because you are the leader. Mother insists I speak no further unless it is with you alone.
And then Hammond is like, we need to take this conversation outside. So from what he's saying, mm-hmm. his mother has been here for weeks, if not months.
Jack's like, you've been watching me? Like, I immediately be like, oh my God, what have you watched?
Well, and it poses a very scary thought of an alien could come through the gate with them that they're not even aware of and could lay out in hiding for weeks until mm-hmm. it decides to make itself noticeable. And, you know, they end up discovering that that is the reason why the iris was overridden mm-hmm. and they couldn't close it. So everyone goes out in the hallway, but Jack stays behind. He continues to talk to the boy and ask him his name. He says that he doesn't have a name. And he points mm-hmm. out, well, you had a son. What was his name? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he asks Jack to call him Charlie because it's a good name. So that's
like
emotional damage part one.
Yeah, that's my like one little plug of where did we have to go there? I mean, I know I get that they did because we need to expose that side of Jack, but just that's rough.
It does establish more that obviously the emotional aspect, but it also establishes he knows things that he shouldn't know. There's no way he should know them. Mm-hmm. So it just lends to the fact more of like, how does he know all this stuff? You know, it's not something that he could have just learned from being at the base for all of 20 minutes.
Yeah, I have to say, as a parent, I never would have said yes to that. If something had happened, someone's like, can I go by Ryder? No. I couldn't do that.
It was super sad, too, because he was like, well, you have a son. What's his name? And I think Jack was like, I had a son.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone now. Which was really sad, too, because a lot of the time, and I have no, like, I obviously am not even a parent, let alone have lost a child. But the fact that, like, he's using past tense of, like, I had a son. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, some people would be like, no, I have a son, and he died. He's not with me anymore, but he's still my son. I still have a son.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sad to see it in such a finite and definite, like, mm-hmm. I had a son, he's gone now, I don't have him anymore, where I don't think some people would look at it like that. They mm-hmm. might look at it as like, I still have a son even though he's gone.
Yeah, that's where we'll digress more at the end, but that parental thoughts on that one. Anyway,
so Charlie tells Jack that he comes from a planet called Retalia, and that it was destroyed by the Gould, and he has come here to warn Earth about the Ritu rebels that wish to eliminate Earth.
I'm sorry, but Retalia and like this whole thing is built on retaliation and super, super great. Right. Super convenient writing. Continue.
So in the briefing room, Sam explains that it looks like the iris was just being controlled from another computer console and from just like someone plugged in another keyboard somewhere and they were able to override it. And she's, you know, they're having people look at it now to figure it out.
She's like, we got a guy. We got some guys taking a look. See, you know, yeah. those software guys. Guys.
guys.
Oh, my goodness. So then we have some dialogue. O'Neill, Frazier, and one Daniel line.
There's two Daniel lines. I'll be Daniels.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I'll be Frazier. O'Neill.
Okay.
Works.
So O'Neill says, the best I can tell, sir, the kids survived a Gould massacre.
Well, that would explain Mom. See, it would be a natural psychological defense mechanism. He's convinced himself that she never left him, that her spirit, for lack of a better word, is always with him.
Well, how did she know about the Salish?
Salish?
Yep, the Salish.
Salish.
Yeah. How did he know about my kid?
Is it possible he is some sort of psychic?
Maybe we'll turn something up in our examinations.
So at this point, they're trying to determine like what's the deal. So they think, okay, well, maybe he's just traumatized and he's pretending his mom is still with him because she died and he's trying to just like cope. But then they also pose the question of, well, could he be psychic? That's something that we could potentially, because the Nox were kind of psychic, so they know that that type of being exists out there. So they're trying to figure out like what the deal is, but they still don't really believe that his mom is there. Jack and Teal'c go to the infirmary, and Charlie, the boy, is scared by Teal'c, but eventually, you know, he's told by his mother that he can trust all members of Jack's team. But Teal'c, like, he's wigged out and he appears to be like in a really extreme amount of discomfort. And he's just like, I gotta go. At first he was like, you know, hi, I'm honored to meet you. You know, and as soon as he gets close, he has to leave the room. So we have some dialogue, Teal'c, O'Neill, and Frazier.
I'll stay with Frazier.
I'll be Teal'c.
So Jack says to Teal'c, what's the matter?
My symbiote became agitated when I entered the room.
Any idea why?
I can tell you only this, O'Neill. In all of my years, I have never experienced a symbiote so disturbed. There is something unusual about this child, O'Neill. I advise you to use extreme precaution in his handling.
I was planning on it.
You have seen it yourself, in the hands of the Gould. A child is nothing more than a potent weapon.
Carter and Frazier checked him out, all the threats we encountered from the other kids.
I didn't find any apparent threat to us, but he's in worse shape than I thought, the poor kid. Several of his major organs have congenital defects.
Oh, God.
It's like Mother Nature put him together in a hurry and got everything just a little wrong. His heart valves are defective, his renal function is a mess, and I have serious questions about his lungs. I'm afraid without some very aggressive medical intervention, he won't live to be much older than he is now.
Can you help him?
Maybe, but he may be beyond anything our medicine can do. There's something else. Charlie's CAT scan. Now, if you look along the lower part of the brainstem, there is the part where normal humans have what is called the reticular formation. It's the part of the brain that determines alertness, our perception of things. Charlie's is twice the size of ours, and that could explain why he knew you had a son. It may also explain why he had such an effect on Teal'c's symbiote.
So what? He's got ESP, some telekinetic thing going on?
I don't know. I'm a skeptic on such things, but... And then she just walks away mid-sentence.
It would explain a lot. So I still don't know, like, throughout the episode, I wasn't convinced that he was psychic, but just the fact that his mother had been there for so long and gained so much information, she was just feeding him the information. That's what I thought, eventually. Charlie explains that it's only the Ritu rebel faction that wants to destroy Earth in retaliation against the Gould attack.
So funny.
I did not pick up on that, I must admit.
Yay, I succeeded at something today.
So we have more dialogue. There's Charlie, O'Neill, Daniel, Carter, Teal'c. God, there's a bunch of people.
I can take Charlie, Daniel. Oh, Charlie Daniel.
Charlie Daniel. Got some fiddle playing to go with that?
I do.
I'll be Carter.
And I'll be O'Neill Teal'c.
Good.
All right, take it away, Charlie Daniels.
Oh, man, I'm looking at the empty space for some guidance. The rebels believe that the Glowing Eye people are too powerful to destroy directly. They believe they can only be destroyed by attrition? Attrition.
Attrition? What does that mean?
Attrition is the gradual diminution of strength or number by...
I know what the word means. I meant context.
My God. They must want to kill all possible hosts. They must think that if the Goa'uld have no new hosts to infest, they'll eventually all die out.
By attrition. Yes.
Well, that's insane. There are billions of possible Goa'uld hosts all throughout the galaxy.
And they are not all human.
Mother agrees. That is why the central authority of the Ritu sent us here.
So, Charlie explains that he's not a Ritu himself, because they asked that. She's like, are you a Ritu? And he said, no, he's human, and he can only see his mother because he's special. And his mother created him to serve as an intermediary, but because of his accelerated growth, his body began failing and they had to come sooner. His mother has been here for weeks to observe and learn how to operate the iris. So, they explain that it is possible for something to be invisible to humans and also still be able to interact with things like overriding the iris. But mom's getting pissed. She's like, this, I can't, these people need to just get
can you
hint.
Imagine if you're like, mm-hmm. this is how you're having to try to talk to people. I'd get a little pissed too. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's mad at how stupid everyone is being and not believing anything. So she shoots blue bolt. You know, we just see it like appear out of an area and it shoots completely through a computer monitor in the infirmary. And it came from that area, that empty space that mm-hmm. Charlie has kept looking towards. So now it's like, okay, we can obviously see something is here now. In the briefing room, they discuss how can they deal with this invisible threat. Teal'c points out that only that his symbiote can sense it. So maybe the Gould can too. And Jack is like, that's really not helpful. Like, you can kind of tell when it's here, but that's it. Like, you can't see where it is. You can't see what it's doing. Like, it's cool, like cool party trick, but not very helpful. So they decide to reach out to the Tok'ra to see if they could be any help. And I don't know why, like, I never put this, but there's a scene of Sam and Daniel going out to, like, communicate with them with that Tolan device, like the Tolan did with the Nox. I was like, oh, that's, they never revisit that, I don't think. They never bring that up again. It's just, like, this once and done thing where they communicate with them that way.
Yeah, so, because the Tok'ra originally, in some previous episode, tell them, like, you can get a hold of us this way, but then... They don't really.
But then they eventually, I mean, have their whatever it's called, the codes and stuff, and they.
Yeah. Well, and I also find it weird that, like, the Tolan are friends with them. Like, mm-hmm. they don't seem advanced enough for the Tolan to be like, you're cool enough to be in our club.
But maybe it's like they created that just for this link in communication as like a safety net, like as a safeguard. Like maybe they trusted them enough to be the gatekeeper between the two, but maybe they're not like super friendly.
Yeah, I don't know. The Tolan just seem like snobs. And like when you think about it, the Tok'ra and Gould don't really create their own technology. They steal it and use it. So the Tok'ra at the end of the day are still an offshoot of the Gould. Again, I still don't quite get it, but I guess they just had to make something up to make the plot work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So Hammond tells Jacob, we see Jacob come through, and a couple other Tok'ra that are not, they're just like, what stock Tok'ra? It's not Martouf, and it's not Anise or...
Which is dangerous.
Truly important.
For that Tok'ra. Yeah.
Right.
We don't know that Tok'ra. Things are probably not going to go well for him.
They might as well just wear a red shirt. Like, let's be real. So Hammond tells Jacob about the Ritu, and Selmac immediately gives orders to this red shirt Tok'ra and that came with him. And like they send him back through the gate real quick. Selmac explains that he has heard of the Ritu and wishes to be taken to see, or, you know, what's going on, where this boy is. And when he enters the infirmary, he has to leave right away because his symbiote be squirming around in there.
You know, like, you know what he looks like, though? That discomfort to me looks like he's like smelling a really bad smell or something.
Yes.
That's what it looks like. Like, you know,
holding in a fart. I don't know. Like, it just looks really uncomfortable, but like not in pain, just like a lot of discomfort.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So these cats are really active tonight because now Luna's trying to get up on the desk.
Oh, Luna.
Well, that's because they know you're onto them and they're furlings. So well,
they are little furlings.
They are furlings.
Like, you know our secret identity. You must be stopped. So where did I leave off? He confirmed that there is a Ritu and the other Tok'ra has already returned with a device. So it's like, that was a pretty quick turnaround. He came back pretty quick.
Like, they had that thing on, like, ready to go. It's not like they had to go get it out of an archive. That thing was, like, readily available.
Yeah. It was...
I had questions like, about that. Right it by was the very gate. Quick.
Yeah. Stop stepping on my stuff. Killing me. So they come back with a device. It looks like a weapon, some type of gun. And... they said that it will expose the Ritu so they can see it. And they use it, and we see Mother, and she's a large insect-looking alien. They don't attack her.
Which, I have questions. How is Insect Mom dialing the, or undoing the iris? Like, where's her hands? Like, what
is
she...
This is the episode that, oh. I mean, she can still, like...
I know, she can...
Pincer tabs.
I guess. I guess. You know, anyway,
two finger typing. It's fine.
I couldn't remember for the longest time, like, what it looked like. For some reason, I was picturing a robot. Like, I don't know why. I forgot. I'm like, is it a robot or like a bug?
It's a bug.
It's a bug. It's a big bug.
And well, I also, because he keeps calling her mother, it makes me think of that Netflix movie called I Am Mother, which is really good. You should definitely watch it. But that mother was a robot.
There you go.
Interesting.
Okay. And what she actually looks like makes me think of something from Starship Troopers. Uh-huh. Like big, scary, pointy bug. Like, would not want to meet that in a dark alley any day of the week.
No.
No.
So Jack, like, apologizes to Charlie for basically not believing him. And we have some more dialogue. O'Neill, Daniel, Frazier, Carter, Teal'c, Jacob, Jesus.
I'll be Daniel Jacob since Charlie is not there.
Okay, I'll be O'Neill, Teal'c, and then Rebecca Frazier Carter.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. So O'Neill says, will someone please explain how that thing could be the kid's mother?
He said their leaders created him to communicate with us. They must have cloned him or engineered him somehow.
Well, all they'd need is some human DNA, and it would be possible to construct him in a lab. Would also explain the extra reticular formation in his brain. Could have been genetically engineered to allow him to perceive this Ritu mother.
But how do they do something that advanced and leave the kids so screwed up?
Genetically engineering a human child would be a very precise exercise, Colonel. Changing one set of genes to alter the reticular formation could have numerous additional ramifications. And Carter says, even though we can't see them, these Ritu can definitely see us.
And Teal'c says, which puts us at a great strategic disadvantage. I understand why the Gould would want to eliminate them. And then we have O'Neill saying, they're Gould, Teal'c. That's their job. Jacob.
Oh, sorry. Jacob. The Ritu are a pretty peaceful race. The Gould wiped most of them out just because they were a possible threat. Daniel says, okay, but how did the Gould wipe them out? To Jacob, they were able to isolate the emissions that we are sensitive to and develop a device that would expose the creatures. Holds up his device. This is a transphase eradication rod. The Tok'ra have managed to rip off several versions of this device. It's also capable of terminating a Ritu.
Well, do me a favor, will you? Don't terminate this Ritu. I promise the kid. And then Hammond says, it appears this Ritu came to warn us of an impending rebel attack.
Jacob says, yeah, the Ritu rebels are kind of like terrorists are here on Earth. Nasty guys. They could do a lot of damage here, folks. Kill a lot of people.
So to break a couple things down. So they have this device they have can detect and also kill a Ritu. You know, Jack did promise the kid, which is not a smart move on your part, man. Like, don't make promises.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if you can keep. But then these small groups are, they're looked at like suicide infiltrators. They sneak in, they split up, they plant destructive devices, and then maximize the damage before anyone can even tell they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another scary thing, because if mom can come through and chill for weeks without being detected, like, how do they know if they're even being followed? Unless Teal'c is there, and there's not a Jaffa on every SG team, unless Teal'c is there, they're not going to be able to really tell if right. any Ritu are sneaking in. And we don't really know when Mother came through. Like, was she on the Salish planet and came through with them at that point? Or was it just any other SG team where she snuck through and stuck around? Like, mm-hmm. you never really know when she came or where she came from. They determined the Ritu can't get through the Iris. So the only way that, you know, mom was on the other side controlling it, but they can't get through it if they don't already have someone on the other side.
Right.
But they need to find out information, and they take the risk of inadvertently exposing themselves to the rebel attack. Jack goes to see if Charlie and his mother can lead them to where this rebel attack would come from.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some more dialogue with O'Neill and Charlie.
I'll stay Charlie.
And I'll stay O'Neill. Oh my God, this is so sad.
I know.
So Jack enters the room and Charlie is lying on the bed. He's crying. And when he sees O'Neill, he wipes his tears away.
Mother says not to cry.
Crying is okay.
She says the boys of your culture do not cry.
Not true. In fact, there is an official list of reasons for which crying is a good thing.
Mother is leaving.
Now, see, that's a good reason. Mom leaving. I believe that's number 6 on the list of good reasons. Actually, 6 is mom is saying she's leaving in a couple days. 5 is actually mom leaving immediately. 4, of course, is mom already left. Now, 3 is huge. One of the bigger ones on the list.
She's still here. She's leaving as soon as she has told you everything that can help.
She's not taking you with her?
She wants to leave me here with my own kind.
Well, for what it's worth, I think she's right. I think you should stay here. You'd be better off.
I think I belong with you, Jack.
Look, Charlie, before she leaves, do you think she could tell us where we can find these rebel Ritus?
She says she'll show me the address.
That'd be great.
Jack, could I be your son for a while?
I don't know, Charlie. I don't think you'd want that.
Yes, I do. You'd be great, I can tell.
I'll tell you what, let's deal with these Ritu, then we'll talk about it, okay? We have Emotional Damage Part 2, the sequel.
Again, we're going to touch this. I can't talk about it right at the moment. We'll touch it at the end because I'll go off on a big tangent about my feelings on that conversation.
Well, I think one takeaway from that conversation, though, is that that they're... It's another one of those moments where they're allowing Jack to be
mm-hmm.
like to say emotions are mm-hmm. okay and crying's okay. And we so rarely get that. So I did appreciate it for that aspect, at least.
Yes. Healthy masculinity.
I appreciate a lot of this. I kind of like at the end get into it. Like just because I get frustrated doesn't like I also appreciate it because there's this like balance of necessity of the adult versus the child and like the mm-hmm. ego of like which is the priority in that scenario, right? And like Jack obviously being more mindful of the child and their experience over his own self.
Right.
So anyway, that's at the end. Ta-ta-ta, at the end.
Yeah, I'll have to. I didn't really make a discussion. I need to hold on. Let me take a note.
Oh, I won't forget. I will not forget.
Okay. Oh my God. I feel like I need to clear my throat. Okay, so they go through the gate. it's like this really weird, like 20-minute mission. They send the map through. They have like one of those TERs like tied to it with duct tape.
It's duct taped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, you know, a couple of rounds around. It's good to go.
It's fine. It's MacGyver. So it's good.
They scan the vicinity to see that the gate area is clear. So they go through and they see that there's like hundreds of them. They like go over this embankment. And it's just like, again, very Starship Trooper-esque. Like, mm-hmm. it's a desert planet, and mm-hmm. they use the TERs, and they just see, like, also, hundreds of them.
What's the damn range on that TER? Because, like, from mm-hmm. that far back, they could see, like, the entire field.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. what?
You're right, yeah. So, they don't believe any have come back with them. They go back through the gate. It's very quick. And they're like, yeah, it looks pretty bad. Like, there's a lot. Sam suggests that they install a palm scanner because she's like, well, it doesn't look like they have hands to like, so we can do that. Like, that'll help. While they're installing it, Teal'c senses the presence of a Ritu. The one Tok'ra, red shirt Tok'ra, is shot.
Yep.
He's blasted through the glass and lands in the gate room. And
with a hole in him.
Yeah. That, their no. weapon is no joke. Those no. flaming blue balls of whatever they shoot.
Flaming no blue joke, balls.
Man. Oh my god, flaming blue balls.
God.
Okay, done.
Sorry. but Teal'c is able to grab the TER and he shoots the Ritu. It's funny because like it explodes, but then it disappears again. And it's like, mm-hmm. well, I guess you don't have to clean up the guts. Because you can't gone. See them.
You can't see it. It's just mysteriously there. Forever.
Yep. So Jack, Hammond, and Jacob run into four more. Four more. I held up five fingers. Four more. So they're like, oh shit, we were followed through, and it's a suicide squad. Like the five that come through mm-hmm. to mess shit up. So they all split up to be like, okay, we're taking them out. Like,
each,
let's go.
Each team gets their own, you know, expendable
yeah.
person conveniently.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. In one way or another, uh-huh. yeah. Mm-hmm. So some highlights. Jack takes Daniel with him, which it was super funny because they're looking like through, you know, whatever. They're like being all stealthy. And Daniel's like, hey, what happens if one comes through the door behind us? And Jack's like, what? He's like, well, no, like, I didn't mean that. Like, I was just wondering. And Jack was like, don't do that. Don't do that shit to me, man. Like, why would you say that?
Yep.
Jacob gets shot, but he's obviously not mortally wounded. Sam takes out a Ritu looking like a badass queen. Love mm-hmm. that for her girl. they go to the infirmary where Charlie and his mother are. And there's, what, two more in there?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So they kill the two bad ones, well, but mother, also mother.
Yeah, because mother kills one of them and then she's mm-hmm. killed by yeah. the other one. Sadly.
Yeah. So they end up, that counts, that's all five. So the one in the gate room that Teal'c got, Sam got one, Jack got one, and then the two in the infirmary. So that's all five. Jack hugs Charlie. He apologizes to him, and Charlie collapses because the kid, again, he's like put together with like paper clips and string. Like,
yeah.
He's all messed up. But there's nothing Frazier can do. He's in multiple organ failure. However, Jacob and Selmac offer to take him to be a host. It would heal his body and he would grow up. And Jack is like, keywords, grow up. Like, that's what he wants for him. And Jack mm-hmm. actually agrees to it. Mm-hmm. So they're getting ready to leave. And they're all in the gate room. And we have the scene between Jack and Charlie. Did you want to read through that?
Mm-hmm.
Jack says, you know, there's another rule that it's sad to, it says it's okay to be sad when you're saying goodbye to a new friend.
I want to stay with you, Jack.
Jacob's going to take you to a place where you can get well. I can't do that. But you know what?
What?
I'll come visit. You'll come visit, okay?
I guess.
So Jacob does warn them that the Ritu will not give up and to be diligent. They say goodbye and leave through the gate. And the episode ends with Jack looking on, sad to see Charlie go.
No.
So I kind of liked the way it ended. I thought Mm-hmm. I have like suggestions, but I don't think it was a complete terrible ending like we've seen in the past.
No, I don't disagree. I like it left a lot of potential storylines to have come from it. I think it wrapped it up, like if that's where it ended, which did like it ends, but like
because we never see him again, right? No.
Right, but are we two ever brought up again?
I feel like they just abandon that storyline. No, I feel like they're referenced somewhere later on because I'm in my rewatch of like season 9 and 10 right now, and somewhere the Ritu have been mentioned in conversation, but they're not like talked about from like a. There's not like something going on with them. They're just referenced. But yeah, we don't see him as a host anywhere. So
that would be another cool person for a new Stargate series to see grown up Tok'ra mm-hmm. Charlie. That'd be pretty cool.
Aww. That would be really cool, actually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, Brad Wright, we need you to listen to that.
Yep.
Yep. Grown up Charlie. I would love that. Actually.
Yeah.
What a wonderful story.
And it'd be like a way to like bring the Tok'ra back in too.
Oh, that would be such a good one.
See the Tok'ra living their best Tok'ra life. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
With their limited supply of, you know.
Yeah.
People. Maybe they have a new mother at this point or maybe. Whatever queen. Yeah. No, I love this episode for its conversation around emotions. That felt to be like not an accidental, but like a quiet sidestep to like mm-hmm. what they were saying, where they're like, yeah, but this is really the message of like, it is okay for men to show emotions. And I thought about it because what year did this come out? This was 99. So like, I'm thinking about how it was when we were that age. Like that's a big deal to have had that said on TV. It's a big deal.
And
to
especially
like have that
coming,
talked about.
Yeah, especially coming from a man to a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
Super. Because if it was like, I hate to say it, but if it was like Sam or Frasier telling him it was okay,
no,
it would have been seen as like more motherly and like acceptable for them to say that. But the fact that it was coming from Jack, I think, made a better impact. And it was much sweeter, I think, coming from him because you kind of don't expect it to come from him.
No. No.
So, Christina, what are your thoughts on some of those scenes where he wants to be called Charlie and he wants Jack to be his dad or he wants to be his son?
Like, I hate and love the writers and everyone of this episode for that plot story because it's so emotional damaging, so emotionally damaging, as you noted many times in the notes. But like, how else would a child react in that moment? Like, that is how they would act because they don't know any difference. And just that like struggle, like it was very triggering for me in a subtle way of like, I thought about it because I wish they hadn't have done that. I wish that maybe Jack's response would have been, or my initial wish was that initially he would say, like, you know, yeah, it's a great name, but, you know, like, here's some other, like, kind of diverted it, right? But he just really leaned into, like, no, it's a great name. Sure. You may own that. And, like, that's tough. Because in doing so, he recognizes that that put him past an emotional barrier that he probably has had a really stiff wall up on. And by allowing that to say like, yes, you may be called that, I can call you my kid's name, he's willingly walking through an emotionally damaged space in his head. And then what's to come after that is even harder because then it becomes he overpromises the whole situation. I think that's kind of leans in because he bonded more with the child. And I think it's important that we saw this side of him. And I think they wrote it right because they did give him the ability to. He could have just shut off and walked away, but he was more emotionally mature. He seems to be more emotionally healed in a way. He's processed a tiny bit because he is allowed to kind of say that sucked. Like you were talking about the reference of like, I had a son, like the, like I had one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is going to suck, but I understand you are a child with no name And the biggest honor I could do is just allow you to like take that, because like understanding how much it would suck for the kid to be like, nope, sorry, I can't give you that. Pick another name after you've gone your whole time without a name and hearing it's important.
I don't know. I'll ramble on and on about it, but it irritates me because poor Jack. Like, why do we have to do that to Jack? Like, why do we have to do that to him? Like, why are we doing that? But then I see the importance of it. I think it's important because there's so much trauma in parenting and so much trauma in navigating life and loss of a child. And it's obvious someone in this world of writing it has experienced that or gone through that, because they're touching on unique points of triggers that I don't think you would touch on unless you've gone through it. And I like have so much curiosity around that.
Because I don't think you would write these scenes in unless you've gone through that. So I'm just more a conversation I want to have around that. I don't know. Because you guys may see all of that completely differently.
Well, I definitely think that this episode and those moments are showing Jack's like work that he's put in through it as mm-hmm. well, compared to previous episodes that involved Charlie mm-hmm. things. And obviously, if you go all the way back to the movie, you know, Jack O'Neill in the movie was about to kill himself. So,
yeah,
you know, it does show growth. I think the way he, you know, him being willing for the kid to be called Charlie and mm-hmm. everything. So, yeah,
I think for kids are definitely like a soft spot for him. Mm-hmm. And he has a hard time saying no, even if it hurts him and it's painful mm-hmm. for him. He has a hard time saying no, and I think it all just stems back to him feeling like a failure as a parent. Like, I feel like that was one of his mm-hmm. most personal and deep failures as in his life, was the fact that he couldn't protect his son. So mm-hmm. a lot of the time when there's a kid involved, it's almost like it's a stand-in. And it's like he has to make up for the fact that I couldn't protect my own kid. So I want to do everything possible to protect this kid in front of me now.
Well, and that's like the dialogue at the end where he says, like, I don't think you'd want to do that. Like in reference to being his son. And then he's like, no, I think you'd be a good dad. Essentially, that dialogue hits really deep.
Yeah. It's sad. Yeah, it's really sad because like as much as an affinity he has for children, mm-hmm. like he's just like, you don't want me for a dad, I'd be a shit parent. I clearly was a shit parent, and I'm sure that's mm. he still thinks of that as himself. But another thing is, like, we all know he has an aversion to becoming a Tok'ra. Like, he personally wouldn't choose it, but mm-hmm. he encouraged the kid mm-hmm. to be like, you should do this mm-hmm. so that you can grow up and live. And that really mm-hmm. says something, where he can put maybe that negative bias or negative feeling aside of that aversion of being a host to a Tok'ra, if it gives him the chance to grow up and maybe like live a life that he normally wouldn't be allowed to have.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Anything else?
I just had forgotten that this was completely shifting gears, by the way. But I had forgotten that this was the episode where they actually put the hand scanner in, and like why they had the hand scanner, because it's mm-hmm. just kind of accepted after that, you know? So it's always the Walter with his hand scanner boop, thing, boop. You know?
Oh, Walter, mm-hmm. he missed so much when he was on vacation.
I know. He's like, he comes back and like his computer's all like different.
Fried. Yeah. It's like, what the hell did I miss, man?
Wasn't the actor, didn't he say in an interview sometime that he would be out doing like stand-up comedy tours? So like, that's why he wouldn't always be on the episodes. I feel like he was doing comedy tours.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, I want to research. That makes sense.
Yeah. But I want to see some stand-up.
Yeah. Because he was. So that's why he was like, I didn't really think that was a big deal. It was just this extra going on and off. And like, I'd be there, I would do it. If not, someone else did it. And he's like, I don't, he said something about my memory of him saying it is that he didn't realize how consistent he was compared to other people. Mm-hmm. He didn't realize the inconsistency. So for him, it was like just a little thing here or there. But yeah.
But he became this character that everybody yes. was like, we love
where's
you.
Walter?
Where's yes. Walter?
Where's Walter? Yeah, but he's definitely a staple. He was doing comedy tours.
Yeah.
Staple of the SGC.
He was.
I think overall, I think this episode is really about parenthood.
True.
Fatherhood, even motherhood, in the most unlikely of circumstances.
So, so question for you guys on that. Sorry to cut you off. Finish it.
No, you're good. Nope. I'm finished.
So the Ritu mother, that was her way in, was creating a child. Well, I guess because they said that they needed to send the child in their state because they couldn't grow to adulthood. So I guess maybe they recognized they needed to create some sort of human to like interact, to give the warning. But my thought process is also like the choice of a child, like being of all the ways that she could have communicated to, you know, Earth about the warning, they chose, first of all, to create a creature that looks just like us of our own doing. That's the way they felt was necessary. But also then intentionally or unintentionally making it a child, I thought was an interesting dialogue, because the boy obviously had a reference of mother and son, not just I exist because of this creature. There was definitely a conversation on that relationship of parenthood.
Well, but he knows. He also knows that he was created and what he was created for. And
correct.
He wasn't supposed to be a child at all by the time that they got to the SGC. But, you know, when you mess with brains and genetics, then. Mm-hmm.
It makes me think of a book that I read called My Sister's Keeper, which they made a movie. It was very terrible. Don't watch the movie. No. Read the book, please. About designer children or children who are conceived to be donors for sick siblings. The book was a little kid had cancer. Their parents decided to do like IVF to basically create a perfect match donor so that she could be a donor for her sister for whatever blood transfusions, bone marrow transfers. Eventually it comes down to like she needs a kidney. And that's the premise of the whole book, is that she doesn't want to do it anymore and she takes her family to court.
So, little fun fact from church upbringing, not that like this happened in that direct way, but I did have, they'll never listen to this, but my youth pastors at the time, they had a kid who was really, really sick. And I remember us having this conversation, and they would go into prayer group to like pray that they could have another child that would be of similar match. They had two additional children. The second one was a match, and that book's not based on total fiction. I remember being in high school and little baby would be like a year old, and they were using blood transfusion. They were doing whatever they could to do whatever they could like to the older sibling. At that age.
And it's
I can't watch that movie.
The movie sucks anyway, and they completely changed the ending, and the book is really, really wonderful and fantastic. But it just makes you think of, you know, children who are brought into the world for a specific purpose. And it's like, I was literally brought here to be a donor to another person. That's my identity. Like, I don't exist outside of this family for any other reason because they need it. Like, it's incredibly sad. And then you look at this boy who was created for the sole purpose of just being an intermediary for to communicate. And it's like they couldn't have thought of any other way. But then also, could there have really been another way? Would there have been a way to communicate? Would SG-1 or Earth take it seriously? They're scary looking dudes. Like, it'd be kind of a hard pill to swallow. So it makes you think of that when people have children for a specific purpose, like to be a donor for a family member. There's a lot of ethical questions that go behind that. Is it ethically and morally the right thing to do? But then you think, people have children for way less. People have children without planning on it. And they're just like, oh, wake up I guess I'm having a sixth kid. I definitely don't make enough money for the ones I have now, but I guess, like, I don't know. There's a lot.
It's tough.
I do think, considering the episode and Charlie and Mother, like, it seems like at least Mother tried to, like, it seemed like she cared. obviously, because mm-hmm. he loved her very much and was very sad when she died. So even though he's basically a clone that they had to, you know, genetically alter and everything, it seems like there was some care there, at least, you know? Because otherwise he wouldn't have cared if she died or, you know.
Right.
So.
Right. And again, this episode reminds me, it's a movie on Netflix called I Am Mother. It's a great science fiction movie, post-apocalyptic, where it's a very similar kind of premise where it's a very unconventional mother, which is a robot, caring for a baby and teaching it and as the child grows up. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a fantastic movie. I just put it on one day without really knowing much about it, and I thought it was amazing. So I highly recommend that.
Interesting.
Nice.
Nice. I like it. Okay, this was like a nice, short and sweet episode. Look at us.
Yeah.
Look at us. Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, I guess there was like a lot of going on, but it was really simple to talk about because it was a good little message. What are we talking about next?
Ooh. Ooh. 1969 is next.
Yes.
I love that episode.
Me too.
Truly one of my favorites.
It's going to be good.
Awesome.
It's going to be super good. I like it. Whose turn is it? Is it mine?
Uh-huh.
I yodeled last time. Someone else.
Sarah yodeled. And I did Hammond the one before that, so.
Oh, that's true. Okay, hold on. Let me think about. Oh, what's my version of this?
There's really no humor to go off of in this episode.
Oh, so. I'm not doing humor in any way. I'm going to do it as Charlie. Jack, don't go. Please don't go. It's going to be so sad. I don't know what's to come. Please close the iris so I don't come back. I'm scared, but I know I'll be okay. Close the iris.
That was a bummer, man. So sad.